Hello, this is David Greenwalt, founder and developer of the Leanness Lifestyle and Club Lifestyle online program, a comprehensive lifestyle management program for weight loss. What you are about to hear is an interview I did on the phone with a very dear friend of mine. His name is Drew Cullum. Drew and I have been friends for more than a decade, and I've watched Drew champion many things in his life. As you will soon hear, I've been along for the ride with Drew as he overcame testicular cancer, multiple disc fusions in his back, diabetes, a torn hamstring that eventually left him dead on the operating table twice, and last but not least, I've watched and helped Drew as he came to grips with his food addictions and obesity. I have no doubt you will enjoy this powerful interview and be able to take away several valuable insights that Drew shares. Welcome, everyone. This is Dave Greenwald. I've got on the phone with me today one of my very best friends. His name is Drew Cullum. Drew, welcome to the call.
Hey, how are you?
Very good. Very good. Thank you. I'm so excited to interview you today. This has been a long time coming, and we're going to get into all that. But why don't you just start in and tell us a little bit about yourself, who you are, what you do, how old you are. Just give us all the stats, and don't leave anything out. Let's get into this. This is really going to be interesting.
Okay. My name is Drew Cullum. Dave's already said that. We've been friends for a long time. I am a teacher and a detention officer in a juvenile correction facility here in Chattanooga, Tennessee. I lived up in Sterling Dixon area for a long time. I'm 5'7". I'm currently about 217 to 18 pounds. I'm 46, I'm soon to be 47 this next year. I think David's birthday is in May and mine's in June. And I've been lifting for approximately 26 and a half years.
It's, you know, when you say 5'7", 217 pounds.
Yes.
Let's fill in the blank on at least a good approximation on what that body fat is at 5'7", 217, because a lot of people listening might say, well, man, this guy's overweight.
I would guess, since I was 4.9 at the show, I guess I'm a good high sevens, low eights is where I would guess that I am right. Probably closer to low eights is where I guess that I am right now.
Drew is someone that I have affectionately referred to for a decade or more as a freak, and anyone listening to this who's ever heard me speak of Drew has always heard me refer to him as a freak, and at 5'7", 217 pounds, and 7-8% body fat, I think you all can get a picture here of what's going on, and obviously if you're listening to this interview, I'm going to provide an opportunity for you to see Drew in pictures or video or whatever, so we'll deal with all that. So here's the thing, too. Now, let's go back a little bit over your history here with
sure.
lifting, and you've been, like you said, you've been lifting a long time. You're going to be 47 next year. When did you start lifting and working out, Drew? And hey, let's go back. Let's go way back, because I think we got to go back to high school for this.
Actually, no. It started in the service. Actually, high school was lifting, but it was what they made you lift on the little universals in school.
Okay.
When I really started lifting, it was in the service. I had been wrestling, and I broke my neck. I told you about that, and I ended up having a fusion many, many, many years later. But anyway, I was rehabbing my neck and fell in love with weightlifting, and I couldn't wrestle for 6 months, and I never went back to wrestling.
Okay, hang on a second here.
Go ahead.
Here's the thing. I know, like, all this.
Yes.
But no one listening does.
Okay.
So let's go there. Now, we're starting right in here. This is some of the most, you know, this is just one of the many reasons, you know, that I had the interview. We're talking about breaking your neck.
Yes.
You're talking about, wait a minute, not being able to wrestle, and anybody listening is going to be like, what do you mean wrestle? I didn't hear anything about wrestling. When did you wrestle?
Okay.
So let's back way up.
You want me to go all the way back?
Let's go back because, you know, hey, listen, here's another thing, too. You served the country.
Yes.
You were in the military.
Yes.
You were in the Navy.
Yes.
And, you know, I want to know what you did in the Navy. I want to know when you joined. I want to know. So let's back up. You were a wrestler.
I forget, you know, you and I have such familiarity. I forget that everybody can't just jump in and out of our conversation like you and I can.
Right.
Sure. I actually became an athlete in high school. Was a pretty good athlete. I was a football player, a wrestler, and played a little bit of track and a little bit of baseball, but football and wrestling were my sports. I graduated from high school in 1979 after winning a state championship.
Yeah, in wrestling.
In wrestling, correct.
What weight class was that?
178. I mean, yeah, 178. I'm sure you're saying 200, but back then it was still in the hundreds. 178.
178-pound Indiana state champion.
State champion. And I took third AAU Nationals.
And here's
I don't know if you knew that.
Yeah, because you and I have talked about that a little bit. So you were third at AAU Nationals in wrestling.
Correct. Yes.
And here's the thing, too. Back then, in 79, when you won the state championship, you know, there wasn't all these multi-classes in the state. It was one class.
No. There was, If you were a state champion, you were the only state champion. There were no A, 2A, 3A, 4A, 5A. No.
Right.
It was totally different back then.
So here you are, basically same height as you are now, adult height, 5'7", yeah. 178 pounds, Indiana State wrestling champion.
Correct.
All right. So, and you played other sports, as you mentioned. All right. So anything else about high school?
Well, I think that's where some food addiction started. If you want to go there yet, if you don't, we can back up and do that later.
You know what? Let's do this. And I don't know. You know, this is something that we can see if this makes sense or not. Some real food things started way earlier.
Yes, yes. Food was used as a punishment in my house. Reward punishment.
How old were you?
Gosh, my mom and dad divorced when I was 8. So I must have been, just moved to my dad, I must have been about 11 and a half. Yeah, and I would get punished for eating too much food, and food was used as it is in a lot of places as a reward. So, and gave me some guilt issues about food.
Right.
And then I would go eat all of it in hiding, so I wouldn't get punished for eating too much food.
Mm-hmm.
So yeah, it started setting up some really food issues. And then you put a wrestler on top of that, where I played football at 200 and something pounds, and I had to get down to 178, and, you know, the food issues there. You wanted to eat, and then, of course, I'm not going to lie, I was like all wrestlers back then. I did some purging.
Right.
Purging,
you wore the sweatsuits.
And one of the actual eating, because you couldn't eat, and getting rid of it. Actual anorexia-type purging.
Yeah,
or bulimia-type purging. Yeah.
Right.
Correct. I don't know if I've ever confessed that to you before, but I've got to be honest for everybody else who's in this thing, so.
Well, that's the thing, is that, you know, obviously among the hundreds of reasons that, you know, I think this is just so, you know, incredibly awesome to be able to interview on this stuff, is there's going to be a lot of people that are going to go, you know what, I'd never tell anybody, but I've done the same thing, or I've been there. And when you're talking about when you were little, you know, and you would hide and you'd eat all this food, and it was a punishment and reward kind of thing.
Well, I'd get grounded for it, and then I wouldn't get any food, so then what do I do? I go sneak stuff out of the freezer. I remember going down the road on my bicycle riding with a cake that had been in the freezer and waiting for it to thaw out so I could eat it.
Right. And you had also, you know, in addition to that whole kind of, you know, negative reinforcement thing going on and really how we just pretty much know that doesn't work well at all
right.
to the psyche of any kid when it comes to food, you know, you also, just by kind of nature, you had within you a lot of a rebel attitude too.
Yes.
Wouldn't you say?
Yes, still do.
Still do. Yeah, still do. Right.
Yes.
Right. And while it's been toned down to the 47 maturity, it's still there.
Yes.
You know, but it's in a much more controlled and balanced perspective now for sure.
Yes.
So you had that kind of in you that was innate, this whole rebel thing. Then you've got someone telling you can't have this, don't have this, you've eaten too much or whatever.
Right.
And you're that rebel nature plus. You had, I don't know where the hunger came from, whether how much of it was physical, how much of it was mental, how much of it was emotional need.
I think emotional need, I'm going to speak for myself, David, everybody's got different, I think it's emotional need and brokenness. And not getting what I needed from, you know, I'm going to set this up for some of the people who understand. My mom and dad divorced. I was 8. I wanted to live with my dad. I couldn't. My mom could not handle me anymore. She sent me to my dad. I already had some eating issues.
Right.
And these are things that made it worse. Then from there, my dad couldn't handle me and sent me to a boot camp. So you feel like, well, God, they don't want me and they don't want me. So food becomes what? A constant and a comfort.
Mm-hmm.
And every time you get with one family, whether it's your mother or your dad, what do? They take you out and celebrate with food. So food has this weird connotation to make everything okay.
Mm-hmm. Got it.
So then... Whether you're alone or with anybody, you start using food to console yourself.
Right.
And I am very much, I've been lifting for 27 years. You know some of the things I've done. We're going to cover some more. But I'm, as most weightlifters are, I'm obsessive compulsive by nature.
Well,
you would agree with that assessment, wouldn't you?
You know, it depends on how serious they are. You know, I think that in some ways, you're best of the best. You take anybody who's a best of the best, and there's some good potential for some OC stuff to be there.
I don't mean out of control, OC. You got to open the lights, but just that you feel this strong desire that you have to do this.
That's right.
And be the best at it. You can't miss a workout. You can't. And it can be a good thing if controlled, and it can be an absolutely bad thing if it's not controlled.
Right.
And my food issues were like that. Well, you know how I ate donuts, and you're going to talk about that later, but when I ate a dozen, I ate a dozen.
Yep.
And it was usually one or two dozen, and it was one sitting.
Right, right. So, okay, so we're coming out of childhood with these food issues.
Yes.
We've got wrestling going on, and we got basically, you know, even now I see wrestlers of today, they're sometimes a little bit smarter, it depends on the coach, but a lot of times they're still Neanderthals when it comes to how they cut weight.
Yes.
I watched my own brother cut weight when he was in high school with the spitting and the not eating and the water suit and all that stuff. And
yes.
And in some ways, unfortunately, we had some collegiate wrestlers die several years back, and that did open some eyes to it. But in a lot of ways, that stuff still goes on. So like you said, you've got these food issues going on. You've got the wrestler stuff going on where you've got to cut weight, so you're deprived. You did come out the backside of it, Indiana State champ. So we've got an athlete here. We've got somebody who's got some incredible gifts, who has a mindset that is extremely competitive and wants to win and wants to be a champion and all this stuff going on. Plus, I tell us, like, when you started lifting, I think early on you may not have realized it, but looking back on it now, you realize that you were pretty strong for somebody who had never done anything.
You know, I found that out early on, David, and I don't want to sound like a braggart, so I'm going to temper these words, but I went in the gym when I was in the service when I was rehabbing, and I saw some what I thought at the time were freaky things. I mean, weightlifted that I hadn't seen since I hadn't really been involved in weightlifting other than our universal. And in a short amount of time, I was able to match some of the achievements of some of the best guys in the gym.
Right.
And I didn't realize that not everybody did that. I didn't know that.
Right. You thought it was,
you know,
just
what I
quick.
Mean?
It's quick.
You know, when I was gifted, and you know, and it, some things when it came to weightlifting came a lot easier for me than it did other people. And I put in the work,
right?
And I worked hard, but
yes.
I know other people who've worked, and I've worked out with them, worked out just as hard as me, and never saw the results.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, it's like everybody's not going to jump like Michael Jordan's. What I tell people all the time, I
right?
Mean, you got to have those genetic gifts,
right? And the other thing is, and when these people you've worked out with, the thing is that while they have progressed, they've gotten better than they were. Just not at the same magnitude and speed that you did.
Correct.
Yeah. So
yeah, everybody makes gains. It's just I made them a little faster than
right.
some other people that I know.
So yeah. Give us like some numbers very early on. Here you are, maybe 200 pounds this year. You're in the Navy, and you start lifting, and the weight goes from your bench press. Everybody can relate to the bench press. Your bench press goes from what to what?
Well, I think the first time in the gym I was benching 225 for reps.
225 for reps?
For reps. A little over that for squat, and I think it took me within a few months I was deadlifting, and I think the first time I deadlifted 405 for a few times.
It never
got a lot better than the deadlift, but as you well know, it was never my strength. But,
right.
I mean, those were the numbers at the time. And within the first year, I competed in my first powerlifting meet, and I did 550, 450, 550.
So five, that's
in
a
220 class.
550 squat.
550 squat.
450 bench.
And remember, that was before bench shirts.
Right, right.
That was way before there were bench shirts. I did have a super suit.
Mm-hmm.
And I did a 550 squat, 450 bench, and a 550 deadlift. And I thought that was pretty good.
How old were you then?
21 years old. 21 and a half, maybe.
What do you think you weighed?
Probably about 212.
Yeah, that's just crazy for your for a first. I mean, benching over double your body weight in a first meet. They have to laugh, and anybody listening to this is going to be like, what the heck? But hey, listen to anybody, you know, for everybody listening to the one thing, Drew tempers it down. He says, look, I don't want to sound like a braggart. If you knew him like I did, you'd know how just naturally toned down just how much not a braggart, you know, Drew is. He just does not look at himself. He realizes that he has the gifts. I just want to tell everybody this. He realizes he has some gifts, and he's appreciative of them and very respectful of them and now sees them for what they are, but in no way, shape, or form does he look at what he does in any way, shape, or form as, you know, look at me and look how great I am and I'm so much better than everybody else. It just couldn't be. It's just the opposite.
Thank you. That means a lot to me.
So you get out of high school.
Yes.
You do some collegiate wrestling.
Yes.
And you do go into the Navy. What do you do in the Navy?
Well, for the first year, you know the answer, but I'm going to go into detail. For the first year and a half, I was a mechanic on the ship. Not for the whole first year and a half. For the first year, I went to boot camp, and then I go to a ship, a mechanic, then I go leave, and I go to Buds. I thought I wanted to be a UDT SEAL. It's not what I want to do. Actually, I wanted to be a diver, so unfortunately, I had to ring the bell. My fifth week, second day. They call it your 5-2 day.
Now, what does that mean for the people that have seen the program on TV for the Navy SEAL training, the BUD training, where they know that these guys ring the bell, these are the guys that quit?
Right.
What does that mean for where you were, though, as far as Hell Week or whatever they call it?
I was past Hell Week.
You were past Hell Week.
Yes. The hardest thing I ever did was quit, because I'm not a quitter. But it's not what I wanted to do, and I just couldn't see myself doing that for the next 3.5 years.
Mm-hmm.
Went back to my ship for a short amount of time and was fortunate enough to get selected to go to dive school in Panama City, Florida, where I became a Navy diver. And that's what I did for my last 3.5 years in the Navy.
And a Navy diver, from what you're talking about, is not just a scuba tank and a mask.
No, it's the hard hat. It's kind of like if people have seen Men of Honor, that kind of deal. You do use the scuba from time to time,
mm-hmm.
but we were the hard hat divers. Actually, I was the last class to get that type of gear, that Mark One, which you see on Men of Honor for those who've seen it.
And that's the deep stuff.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. 200 feet.
200 feet. Yeah.
Yeah.
So what were you weighing then?
As you well know, because of my eating issues, I went home. I had 30 days leave before I went to dive school. I was 230 when I got to dive school because I did nothing but eat for 30 days before I went. I'd been staying around the 200-pound range at that time, 205, 210, gained 20 pounds in 30 days.
And that was 30 days before you left for dive school?
Before I left for dive school. You get to go home for 30 days on leave.
Oh, okay.
So you party and eat and get
right.
lazy.
Right, okay.
And got to dive school. Once I was dive school, I think the first 2 weeks I lost 25 pounds. Of course, I passed out the first day of dive school not being in shape. I thought they'd ease us into it, and we took off and started running, and we got about a quarter mile from being done, and I passed out.
That was it. Now, yeah. What year was this?
That would have been 1981.
Okay.
25 years ago.
You bet. All right, so what else do we need to say about that? You came out of the Navy. You hung in the weight. The weight range for you in the Navy.
Excuse me.
Okay.
It would have been, you're right. It was 1981. 1980.
So you spent the majority of your Navy time in the 210 to 220 range?
Well, I think when I got out, it was probably about 230s. 230s, yeah.
Okay.
My weight didn't balloon up until I got out of the Navy.
Okay.
Because I had to run so much in the Navy. Being a diver and being physically fit, I was running and swimming all the time.
Right.
Cardio was high, so it allowed me to keep my weight down, and I was lifting, and I still did cardio back then. I was pretty young. When I quit doing cardio and some other things happened is when my weight went crazy.
Right.
Really crazy.
Well, you had a true love and actually, of course, a disorder with the food.
Right.
Love for it and a disorder combined.
Yeah.
And, it's like we've talked before, we'll probably finish there, is, the cardio back then, with the limited knowledge you had on food, at least it allowed the weight to stay at a somewhat reasonable level.
Reasonable for my height, and I wasn't the leanest, as lean as I am now body fat-wise, but
right.
230 back then, probably a 12-14% body fat at 230.
Which is still, of course, amazing at 5'7".
Right.
All right, so you come out of the Navy, and you said that's where the weight really started to climb, and that's
correct.
Where, when I first met you, the majority of those years, those early years, this is kind of where you were.
Yes.
So what'd your weight kind of go up to then?
Well, I think,
I'm sorry.
Go ahead.
You had a neck injury.
Yes.
Now, we skimmed that at first. When did that happen, and what was that about?
Well, that was in the 80s, and that was wrestling in the Navy, and I had been wrestling, trying to go to the Olympics. I had won All-Navy, and I was wrestling in some inter-service meets to see who was going to go, have a chance to make the Olympic team. And I got hurt in a wrestling match and busted my neck. And that would have been, I believe, about the same time that I got out of dive school. So that would have been sometime in 80, 81.
Okay.
I'm not sure. I have to look for sure, but I believe it was 81. To be honest with you, because I was out in California at that time.
So what happened with the broken neck?
I told you, I had played around with lifting before.
Right.
And, I was paralyzed for a little while. You know how you see them on the football field and they can't move for
right.
a minute. And then, the swelling goes away and they're fine, which is pretty much what happened with me. And took me to the hospital and the doctor said, I had what's called a hairline crush, where you have fractures all the way around the vertebrae. And there's some little bit of disc damage, but nothing serious. And that was at C6, C7, which is the same one where I ended up having fused many, many years later, 24 years later,
right.
David, something
right.
like that. But So he told me to rehab it, and I couldn't wrestle for a minimum of 6 months.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I couldn't get permission to go to camp, which is the camp you go to if you made the All-Navy team. Even though I made it, you have to have permission to go. Just like when you were a police officer, you have to have permission to, you know, to go to a school or to go to this, and I couldn't get permission because, you know, diving, they paid a lot of money for me to go to dive school, and they weren't about to let me go TAD, temporary assigned duty, for 6 months just to wrestle.
Right.
So that being said, and the fact that I started falling in love with weightlifting, and there weren't a lot of places for me to wrestle, wrestling just kind of fell to the background, and I just took that same competitive edge that I had for wrestling and turned it into powerlifting.
Okay. So you're out now. You're out of the Navy.
I'm out of the Navy.
And you're
1985.
You've been lifting, starting to lift more and more seriously. You're starting to take powerlifting into some seriousness?
Yeah, well, I have been doing it the last few years in the service, but I think I got home and met a lot of you guys, and you guys were wanting to start powerlifting and hadn't really been powerlifting a lot around there.
Mm-hmm.
And I met, you know, all of y'all, and we all started lifting together.
Right.
Of course, you came in a couple years after that,
right?
I mean, because of my friendship with some of our mutual friends,
right?
It kind of took off from there,
right? All right, so let's talk about, where'd your weight go? What kind of strength was associated with it? And let's talk about that period.
Okay, well, I think I was just, for a while there, I was just lifting. You know, I wasn't doing a lot of competing, and you know, I was chasing that 500-pound bench, as you well know.
Mm-hmm.
And I think before I finally succeeded, I was riding that, 275?
Body weight.
Area?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, body weight,
mm-hmm.
275, 280. And I don't remember what year, you might remember, David. Late 80s, early 90s, when I finally started getting 500.
That's, yeah. And that's, there was a period in there, I remember, when you and I were talking, and you had entered another local whatever.
Yes.
And I said, isn't it about time you ended that kind of stuff?
Yeah, and that was after I'd done about three or four meets and
right.
I'd gotten 500 low to mid 500s.
Right.
And you said you don't need to do any more local shows. Yeah, I think I had ballooned past 275 by then, though, because I was starting to think I might be able to bench 6, and I think I'd eased up on to 300 by then.
Mm-hmm.
Because at that point, it was all about how much, I didn't care how much I weighed. It was all about, well, I can bring whatever my body will do, how much I got to weigh. To lift this amount of weight is what I'm going to do.
And, you know, going along back again with that, you know, more of the immature period where you were in your, you know, 20s and
yes.
you know, early 30s like that, what was your mindset as far as size, you know, as far as your size or someone else's size back then, which is no reflection of how you feel now?
Right. First of all, I had a really distorted image of who I was. I mean, I'm 5'7", I'm 300 pounds, and I thought I was lean.
Thought you were lean, right?
I thought I was lean.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you know, I remember distinctly when my dad gave me a picture after one Christmas, and it was about that time. And he said, "Here you go, Buddha." You know how Dad called me Buddha.
Yeah.
I mean, you knew him well, too.
Right.
And I'm like, that's not me. That's not what I look like. So I had, you know, a really, really messed up view or perception of what I look like.
Right.
As you know, I'd take my shirt off in a minute.
Yeah, oh yeah.
Like I had a six-pack.
No hesitation.
And crunched down like I was really showing somebody something.
You're right.
And I had wearing 46, 48-inch breeches. So
right.
For those of you out there, that give you an idea how big my girth was.
Well, Drew's absolutely right. I remember it well, where it wouldn't matter. It wasn't bashful at all. Like you say, you were, of course, huge. And I don't mean just, you know, body fat wise, I mean, you were just, you know, muscle thick and you had a high body fat, but you wouldn't hesitate at all to take your shirt off.
No.
Wouldn't hesitate.
Because I didn't see myself the way I actually was.
Right.
Like a bowling ball.
Right. All right, so here you are. You've done some local competitions, you've done some whatnot, you've benched over 500 pounds.
Yes.
I finally said, it's enough. That's enough. Let's quit playing around here. It's time for you to move on and do something big.
Yes.
And so then you set your sights on what?
NASA Nationals.
National, yeah.
National Bench Press Championships.
Mm-hmm.
And I have to thank all that to you. Although in the end, once I accomplished the goal, and I did go, and I guess that would have been 19, was it 92? I've got the trophy, the medals at home. I believe it was 92.
That sounds about right.
I believe it was 90. Yeah, because I was going to SIU and also going to, and I graduated there in 93, so it would have been 91, 92, 93, right in that area.
Mm-hmm.
And I actually went 2 years in a row to Nationals and 1 year to World Cup in a row. And I went to another Nationals later on. I think I went to four total.
How'd you do it at the first Nationals, by the way?
Thanks to a good friend of mine. Well, first of all, let's say this. Because of my eating issues, I didn't make weight. I originally was going to go in at 275.
Mm-hmm.
I did watch my food for a few days and my water for 2 days. And got and realized I was 5 pounds away when we got there, Dave?
I think so.
I finally weighed in, 5 or 6 pounds.
Yeah.
And decided I was going to make it. And it was about 280, 281, and went and ate for the next 3 to 4 hours. And I think by the time I weighed in the next morning, I was like right at 301.
Mm-hmm.
So just to...
Yeah, that's some big water change.
Yes.
Big
water
change.
Huge amount of water change retention. Just so I was... How crazy eating was for me at that time.
You bet.
Because I had deprived myself 4 days, I felt like I deserved to eat anything I wanted and as much of it as I could for like 5 hours straight. And you were there, so you know I'm not exaggerating.
No, it's true. And here's the thing, too, just perspective-wise. What kind of eating was that?
Well, I can remember, and I can't remember everything because it was a while back, but I remember the first thing I did is I grabbed a good friend of ours, David Jansen, and took him, and we went to a steakhouse. I had a steak. I think I had 2 baked potatoes. I know I had 3 or 4 trips to the salad bar and at least 3 loaves of bread.
Mm-hmm.
And then I came back, and I ate some donuts and a half a gallon of ice cream. And then we went out that night, and I don't remember the name of that restaurant, but remember that chicken fried steak was as big as a platter?
Right.
And I think it was got to be 2 or 3 pounds of french fries, and gravy was smothered over all of it.
Right.
And then came back and ate some more because I was worried about losing strength because I didn't eat barely ate for 4 days and hadn't drank for 2 days.
Right.
And I know during that time I consumed at least a gallon to a gallon and a half of liquids.
Mm-hmm.
So that would have been a typical evening for me after I deprived myself.
Right, right.
And I would have told you I didn't eat very much.
Yeah, yeah.
I would look you dead in the eyes. Well, I didn't have that much.
and by the way, back in the day, Drew had said that to me several times.
Yes.
I really don't eat that much.
I don't eat that much. No, you're right. I would have.
So, you know, one of the things, too, we've talked about many times that, you know, you just all but don't do anymore at all is... Like, for instance, you know, a sports fan, so you'd watch a football game in an afternoon.
Yes.
And in the football game, we've talked about how you would sit down with what would it be like, an entire package of double stuffed or I don't know.
Oh, absolutely. And then a bag of chips on top of that.
And as you're watching the game, the hand goes down.
Yes.
Picks it up. Into the mouth it goes. And at some point in time, maybe in the first quarter, you look down.
10 minutes into the first quarter.
10 minutes into the first quarter, you look down and you go, hey. Where'd all the cookies go?
Yeah, where'd all they go? Who's been eating my cookies? Yes.
And of course, it was you. And then, like you say, then you move on to a bag of chips.
Yes.
And before the end of the game, that's gone.
And at halftime, you got to run and get some more.
Right. Okay.
Yes.
Forget the end of the game. It's halftime.
Yes.
Yeah, okay. So, I just want to lay this foundation because there's a lot of people that are going to be like, you know what, that's where I am right now.
Yes.
And, there's a happy ending here, folks, so that's why I want you to just kind of hang in there with us, because all this that was going on that I know a lot of you can relate to listening to this, there's a happy ending here. So,
yes, there is.
All right, so what else do we need to say? Let's just you were a bench master. I mean, you had a strong squat. You had a good deadlift.
The only reason I quit squatting is because of the back fusion, which probably kind of went to the first weight gain, as you well know. And we didn't really cover that, but I did have my lower back fused, and that would have been 1990.
So you had your back lower back fused. Why?
I had a herniated disc.
And when did that occur?
I don't know, David.
Okay.
I probably when I was working at IBP, being bent over on those cement floors all day.
That's a meatpacking plant,
yeah,
by the way.
Yeah, a meatpacking plant.
Okay.
Who knows? I could have heard it weightlifting, but when I really recognized it, when it caused me problems was cutting meat 8 hours a day.
Okay. So he had his, which disc was
L5S1.
It? L5S1's fused.
Yes.
And so you move on from there, and that's a lot of weight gain came after that.
Yes.
You spent a lot of time in your late 20s, early to mid-30s in the 300-pound range.
Yes.
Basically.
Yes.
275 to 305, somewhere in there.
I think the heaviest was 318, so 275 to 318.
Okay.
But probably closer than that 300 range. 298 to 305 was probably where I was most comfortable.
Right. Always lifted, or for the most part, I think you did take a period where you took some time off.
And that was during that back thing, yes.
Okay.
But after I came back from that, I never took any time off
right.
that I can think of
right.
for more than, you know, 2 or 3 weeks because of an injury.
Right. So, you know, as far as the bench goes, I remember there was a phase when you were in that 275 to 300 range where you benched 600 with no shirt.
Yes.
And you were lifting with, you had a workout with Snooki where I know you did that.
Yeah, I think it was 630 that day or something.
630 pounds.
Yeah, I believe it was. Yeah.
Yeah.
I was really, and that's about the time when I said I was going to do whatever with my weight to bench 700.
Right.
When I did finally bench 6, and that's when all the health problems started.
Okay.
I think part of it was my mom dying because of the stress, and I'm not going to go into a lot of details there because we've both gone through that, and, you know, that's just a symptom of the eating. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It just caused more. But I think when I went and thought I was having a heart attack and my blood sugar was 600, is when I said, you know what, I told you this, and I think you used to laugh at me because of how many times I've talked about with my portion size and all that, but I said, if it ever becomes a health problem, I'm going to lose weight.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a health problem, and it was a serious health problem, and I had a young child. At that time, she would have been 2,
mm-hmm.
David?
Yeah, that sounds about right.
Yeah, and I want to watch her grow up, mm-hmm. and I said, I got to get serious about this.
And the health problem was you had some diabetes, right?
Yeah, 600. My blood sugar was 600.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I thought I was passing. I thought I was having a heart attack at work.
Mm-hmm.
I got lightheaded and about passed out, and it ended up being high blood sugar. And I think I reached out to you. And told you I needed some help, and we talked about what I needed to do. And you, I think you were at the process at that time. You either were just finishing up or just starting
the
writing Leanest Lifestyle. Yes.
Right.
Yes. Of course, I was still locked into the old mentality of the Atkins diet.
Right.
Because it's the only thing that I'd ever had any success with.
Right. Right.
And it's the only way I knew how I could lose weight and eat something that I could tolerate eating. My process, my thought process hadn't really changed yet.
So you got this back fusion. Any other surgeries or issues up to this point here? Let's say that we're at the point where you've had the health scare.
Well, yeah, you know, I had the, and they don't know this, the people listening, but yeah, I had the testicular cancer.
Oh, that's right. So when was that in relation to the back fusion or anything?
I think the back fusion was 90, April of 90, and then I graduated college in 2003?
Well, that was...
I mean, not 3, 93 or 94?
Yeah.
It would have been December, I can tell you, this is 12 years, 2004, December 6, 2004.
Well, that was with your master's, though.
Yes. No.
Because 2000...
Not 94.
There you go.
94.
I say, and when did you... You got a master's degree, too. When was that?
2001.
And that was an education?
Yes.
All right, so you had testicular cancer.
Yes.
You went in, you noticed something. The doc says, basically, I remember that period you were telling me about that where the doc kind of gave you a look, or the nurse did, like, this is not good.
Yes.
And that's where you went, I can see on your face this isn't good. So
yes. You need to tell me now.
Right.
And they said, we don't want to do surgery tomorrow. And I said, I'm a senior in college. You can't do that.
Right.
And let me go back and see if they'll let me take my finals early, which they did.
Okay.
And I missed the last 2 weeks of school. Yeah. I remember it like it was yesterday. Because you were, of course, again, there for me and brought a package for me full of supplements and stuff that was, you know, that was going to help me get through the radiation treatments that were to come. So you were a big help.
So now they did remove a testicle, of course.
Yes. My left testicle was removed.
Yeah. And so you did come out of it. Good. You did do the radiation.
Yes.
And and you came out of it, you know, and basically, good to go.
Yes.
So
more determined and better than ever.
Right. More determined and better than ever. Yeah.
Yes.
So all right. So anything else now? Up to we had the back fusion. We've got testicular cancer. You broke your neck.
Yeah. Well, and I didn't know it was surgery, but remember, right before 5 weeks before the World Bench Press Championships, I tore my bicep in half.
Oh, that's right. Yeah, and of course, every time you got something to keep in mind here. Every time Drew has had one of these things happen, up until I would say the last year or two, we all of his friends would say, "Oh man, oh gosh, poor Drew. He's really, oh, this could be it." And then about 2 weeks after he has whatever, He's like, I only benched 400 for five today, and my squat wasn't so good, Dave. My squat was only 600 for a double, and then the rest of us, of course, we've learned to just kind of go like, well, it's just another thing. He's going to be quick to recover. He's going to come out of it, strong and great, and let's just put it this way. We feel for him. We just have less sympathy now.
There is. He's telling the truth.
We used to have a lot of sympathy because we just didn't know what was going to happen. But now it's like, I don't know. If they, cut off an arm, he's still going to bench 4.5 somehow. all right. So, you tore your bicep. Anything else up to, let's bring it up to, back surgery time?
I don't think so. Okay. And if it is, it's not important because I can't remember it off the top of my head.
I got it. So, okay. So, moving forward, we've set these records. We've won some national championships. We've gone to Worlds in the bench. We've accomplished a lot of things. You've gotten up to the point where now you've got a daughter. She's 2 years old. You've got a bona fide health scare. It's legit. Blood sugar 600.
Yep.
You actually did, giving you all the credit in the world, you actually did say, you know what, one way or another, don't know exactly how I'm going to start or what, but one way or another, this has got to end.
Yep.
And you did. So what, how did you... Because I know you were very, very Atkins style, like you said. It was those foods were very still tasty to you. All that fat and gristle, and it allowed you to eat that stuff a lot. It was, I remember it was a lot of sausage, a lot of cheese, a lot of whole eggs,
oh, yeah.
a lot of
oh yeah pounds. No, it would be a pound of sausage,
right?
Yes.
And but as you were doing that, the first time you lost weight, remind me when you lost this weight after the health scare. Were you getting ready for a show, or was it just because of the scare? What did we decide on that?
Well, it was just because of the scare, and then I started ballooning back up, and then I said, I've got to do a show to get it back down, if you remember correctly.
Mm-hmm.
First time I lost it, I didn't do a show. And,
okay. What did you get down to?
The very first time?
Yeah, the very first time.
248.
So you went from about 300 and some to 248.
Right.
Okay. And that was still... at best, a highly modified, what eventually has become a leanness lifestyle, but highly
right.
modified to incorporate more of the fatty foods and
right.
just to bring your carbs down.
And you kept telling me I needed to change some things, and that worked to a point, and I was like, this will work.
Yeah.
Because it was comfortable.
Right.
Right.
All right, so one of the things I remember, and it's just coming to mind now again, too, is this: was it the first time, or was it the second time, or what was it, Drew? You were getting ready, you had decided you were going to do a bodybuilding show. And just to kind of set it up here just a smidge, this is not how you feel now, and that's just the whole growing maturity and all that, but when you were a power lifter, and you had the size, and you thought of yourself as a certain way, and
yes.
certain things that were equated to people with size and all that, what did you think of bodybuilders? Generally speaking,
I didn't think they were athletes.
Right.
First of all, and second of all, I thought, I'm not going to say it as harsh as I would have back then.
Right.
But I thought they were stuck on themselves.
Right.
And maybe a little too interested in themselves
mm-hmm.
and others of their same gender. And I'm just going to leave. That's as nice as I can say how I thought about it when I was a powerlifter.
Right.
I think everybody understands what I'm saying.
Yep.
And it's pretty clear.
Everybody will.
But that's pretty much how I felt.
And the other thing, too, like you said, is just in general, unless they were a top of the top world class, Arnold Schwarzenegger type winning the Olympia, they just weren't big.
No.
I mean, they just didn't have it along with the other things. So here we are, and this has been something that we, your friends, knew about you for a long time, that, powerlifting was it.
Yeah.
Because you got the size, and you got to eat, and you had this massiveness going on. So now, at some point here, after that first pass down to 248, you say, I'm going to do a show.
Pretty much.
Right.
Well, all the symptoms would come back. I think my weight started creeping back up. And I may be confusing that thing I did. No. Yeah. Am I confused? I'm going to try to ask you to help me with my memory for a second. Am I confusing that with what I did with that contest I was in, that transformation contest? That first one was 248, wasn't it?
That, I believe so.
But I had diabetes already, hadn't I?
Yes.
Okay, I just want to make sure my timeline was right.
You did not ever go under 250 until you had a health scare.
Okay.
No way.
All right.
So then you do decide to do a bodybuilding show.
Well, I knew I needed to get down leaner than what I was. I think I'm on my way to creep back up. Actually, I think I made an excuse. I need to do another powerlifting meet.
Okay.
Remember?
Yeah.
And I said I'm going to do 250, and I ended up going in and doing a 270 class, I think, or whatever the class that was. They keep moving them in NASA, so I'm a little confused, but I think it was the 270 class, and my weight started creeping back up. Now I remember, my sleep apnea started coming back. I forgot to tell everybody I had that, and some of my symptoms started coming back, and I said, we need to pick out a show. And I said, pick out a show that we can all three do. That's me, you, and Snooki.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how that came about.
Was that your first show? That was your first show up in Rockford, wasn't it?
Yes, it was.
Okay. So you're training for that. Now, here's the thing, too. You know, you think about, people talk about how long they diet. And, of course, in Leanest Lifestyle, we try to avoid that word. But I'm going to use that word appropriately for what you were doing back then.
Well, it was. That's how I looked at it back then, not now.
Right.
But back then, yes.
So it was more of a diet. But, you know, here's the thing. You had kind of continually, gradually lost weight for, what did we decide? It was like 18 months?
Yes.
2 years?
Yes, 18 months.
And at a certain point, you'd gotten down to a certain point on your weight, and you had gotten stuck, and you had been doing this low-carb Atkins thing for a long time, and we finally started talking, and we basically came up with a solution, and that helped open your eyes to maybe this other way.
Yes.
And where, you know, the whole low-carb Atkins diet kind of thing, it did take you to a certain point.
Right.
But you did stall out, and as big as you were eating the calories that some of my female clients that weigh 130 pounds were eating.
Well, I was just stalled it to nothing.
Right. I mean,
you actually made me, if you remember correctly, you made me at one point overeat a little while.
That's right.
To rev everything back up, mm-hmm. and then had modified how you wanted me to eat on that. You told me to keep eating more Atkins, but to add in more chicken and fish instead of sausage. And that was kind of the transfer. You said I could eat a little bit of this and a little bit of that, but not to eat totally Atkins. And sent me the book. And once I read it, it really opened my eyes.
So you did this show, and you came in at what weight?
Well, I thought I was lean.
Yeah.
And it was actually the weight I was shooting for, and that's why I won't get caught up in weight again. Mm-hmm. But I believe, if I'm correct, I came in at 212.
Yeah, and you were probably somewhere between 10 and 12%. What do you think?
You know what? I've looked at pictures, and I would say I was every bit of 10.
Okay.
If you want to call it 11 or 12, that's fine, but I was every bit of 10.
Okay.
Big, muscular looking, a few cuts, but basically all you could see was shape.
Right. I remember we were all so proud of you for coming in and actually doing it because, the time that we knew you, had never seen you below basically 270-ish or 260-ish.
Right.
And so it was a monumental feat.
I was very embarrassed, but you're right. Looking back on it, if it was body transformation, I'd have won, but it's not. It's bodybuilding.
Right. One second.
And so it was a tough, hard, valuable lesson.
One second. I just want to make sure it's going. Hang on. One second. One, two, three.
No. Too lengthy, Emma.
No, not at all.
Okay.
No, we're good. We're good. All right, so... No, we're just fine. It's great.
Okay,
so I just want to make a note on when this was, 44 minutes. Okay, so you do the show, and primarily, and this has kind of been a pattern, and I just think it's great. One of the things you've used bodybuilding for is to keep yourself reeled in, and also to give you that other competitive thing to be competitive about. But it keeps you reeled in for where you can be with your food, where you can be with your body and your body fat and health and all that. So there was a time, by the way, with this whole diabetes thing when you were on diabetes medication, right?
Correct. Didn't last very long, but yes.
And then you got your body weight down. The doc finally said you don't need it anymore.
Actually, it was really cardio. I think within 30 to 40 days, he took me off. And you know what? I'm going to be honest with you. If I had been smarter, I probably would still be taking the metformin because it's actually a pretty good supplement to take when you're, I don't want to say older, but when you're not anymore.
You're insulin resistant.
Yeah.
You're not as insulin sensitive.
Correct.
As we'd like. I've told people in my boot camps, you know, one of the things that happens as we age, in other words, older than 30, we get more and more insulin resistant. And metformin is, of course, a prescription drug that's used to improve insulin sensitivity and it's used a lot of times for these type 2 diabetics. But so you were able to get off that. Now the other thing too is other parameters, health parameters that you can remember. What was cholesterol, triglycerides, anything that you can remember?
Yeah, but that has more to do with, and I'm going to share this with everybody, my hormone replacements from when I lost my testicle.
Right.
Those things go hand in hand. And so, yeah, my triglycerides ever since I've done hormone replacement was 10, 12 years now, have always been a little off. My overall cholesterol number is still good, but my HDL, LD numbers have never, ratio has never been as good as they should be, just because you're taking the outside source test versus normal source test. I think my overall cholesterol on leanest lifestyle runs about 175 to 180.
Can't get much better than that, though. I mean,
no,
that's awesome.
Not at my age.
But
no.
What was it when you were that 300
in
health
scare? One time, remember, if you remember, they couldn't read it.
Okay.
It was so, I mean, they said it was so high they couldn't even read it. I mean, I want to say 400 and something, and my triglycerides couldn't even be read.
Right, right.
Because they were so off the ballpark.
So now, you did this first show, you got a feel for it. You knew after the show that it wasn't going to be enough to do well in bodybuilding.
Right.
But you were using it for multiple purposes.
Yes.
And still have used it for multiple
And had a great time.
And had a great time. Yeah, we were all at the same competition together. And we did have a great time. So, since then, any other injuries, any other surgical issues, any other problems that you've had to deal with?
Yes, several. I had my neck fused in 2 years ago, so what would that have been?
Well, it'd been 04.
Yeah, 04. And last year in August, as you well know, August of 05, I tore my hamstring and got what they call compartment syndrome, where the blood won't flow, and they had to do a phasiotomy where they cut the leg open, and ended up bleeding to death. Was in ICU for 10 days, and died twice, and so. But have overcome that, and since squatted 700 pounds at least one time. And when they said I wouldn't even be able to walk again, so that's why David laughed earlier when. He said, "Ah, we don't feel too sorry for him." So that was for all of you out there, that's why he did that earlier. So.
Well, and you know, that hamstring thing. You tore the hamstring.
Yes.
And it was a little bit before you realized it was really torn and a problem, and it swelled up, and it got huge. And you went to the doctor, and you went to the, I don't know if you went to the hospital or doctor's office or emergency room, but whatever it was.
Went to the doctor, they sent me straight to the emergency room.
Sent you straight to the emergency room.
Yeah.
Were you admitted right away?
Yeah, they said another 12 hours I lost leg, so.
So it's bleeding.
Yes, internally.
They went in and they did some surgery, and that got botched up somehow.
They gave me a machine. It's called a backpack, and the suction went on it. And I tried to tell them there was a problem, and I was bleeding out. And, of course, you know, I'm not a doctor. 8 more years, and I've been a doctor, but they don't listen to you. So in the meantime, I bled out, which caused a lot of other problems. As you well know, you had to hold my wife's hand through the whole thing.
Right.
And but eventually I got better. I don't want to dwell on all the negatives. I mean, I got better, and I forgave the doctor, and that's all over with. And
but here's the thing.
Yes.
Without blaming, just a factual accounting here is, you talked about, you said, hey, I died on the table twice. I mean, you were out. What do you mean? What do you mean by I died on the table? From a medical perspective, basically you had no blood pressure.
No blood pressure, and they had to actually bring out the defibrillator and bring me back.
Shock you back.
Yes.
Yeah. And and so, you know, here's one of those things where one day it was touch and go. Your wife's saying, you know, we don't know.
Yes.
We don't know if he's going to make it.
Correct.
Let alone ever
lift
again. I
don't think they expected me to at one point.
Right.
You might remember that better than me, since I was on enough Dilaudid to choke a horse. But.
Right. Exactly. So you were going through that, about three days later, I'm getting a call from wife saying, yeah, you know, he's ornery, and he's giving the nurses a hard time, and he's alert and doing his thing, and you're like, you got to be kidding me. Even he goes from that to that, and
yeah.
But once they got a handle on it, and they medically got you in the right place and the right treatment, you started once again recovering quickly,
very quickly.
And then you got out of the hospital. Here's this: you had this major surgery on the hamstring, and how long was it before you started lifting again?
Well, I was in the hospital 10 days. I started doing cardio. I was home a week, so that would have been 2.5 weeks. So I started doing, then I did 3 or 4 days of just cardio. So I was probably lifting at the outside. I'm going to go with the longest, 3 weeks.
Right.
3 weeks.
Total. That includes the time in the hospital.
Yes. 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 Yeah. Total time. From injury to lifting again. Yes.
And then, you know, of course, I'm telling you, be careful, take it slow, and you're going, I'm taking it real careful, Dave. I'm only leg pressing 550 today for 30 reps.
I think you exaggerate just a little bit, but you're probably close to the truth, but that's probably a slight exaggeration.
Oh my gosh. So anyway, I'm like, you got to be kidding me. Take it easy. You're like, well, it is easy. You know, and that's the way it's always been. 550 pounds on leg press. Well, it is easy for me because I only usually do 1200. or whatever.
Okay.
Excuse me. All right, so you had the leg, you know, basically no blood pressure, died twice on the table.
Yes.
Came out the backside of that, continued on. What else?
Have I had anything?
Since then?
Well, you know, I forget to talk about part of my, when they did my neck and fused it, remember I tore my anterior delt off the bone.
Yeah.
But that's pretty much it. I mean, right. You know, there's probably a lot of little things that I'm forgetting, but those are the major ones that I remember.
Right. Now, since that first contest, you haven't just done one bodybuilding show.
No.
How many have you done now?
I've done four.
And just briefly, what is the primary catalyst, for the most part, for why you do these shows?
You know, to keep me from being taking food and just running off with it, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
It keeps me on a focused pattern to say, you know what, okay, it's going to get away from me. I'll pick out, you know, I've already got my next show picked out.
Yes.
It's next June.
Right.
So even though I've gained, I don't know.
No, hardly anything.
Yeah, well, 15 pounds. Let's just say 15 pounds
right.
for lack of 15 pounds since I did a show in August. If I didn't have a show next June, I'm liable to get to 220. And even though I say, you know, I'm going to stay in my 32s, you know, let's go ahead and get to 34s. These are getting kind of tight. You know, 205 looks pretty good. I mean, 225 looks pretty good. 230, then you're like, well, you know, I'm feeling pretty strong now. That's where the problem comes in, David.
Right.
Then you start feeding the other monster, my powerlifting guy.
The strong
230,
monster.
230, man. It's like, well, you know what? I'm almost 50. I wonder if I can still get five and a half.
Right.
You know, I can do it at 242. Well, I don't want to be 230 and lifting at 242, so let's go on up to 242. Well, I can get it at 245 or 248 because it only take me 2 days to cut back down
right.
to 242. You want to be at the top of the class, and then you start chasing that other monster.
Yes.
And then you start having to eat food
right.
to gain the weight, and then the next thing you know, food is no longer a catalyst to be a better lifter. You know, it's the food.
It's a monster again.
Right. It's no longer a tool.
Right.
It's all about the food.
Right. Right.
It's not a tool to lose weight or gain weight. It's just all food. I got to have this, got to have that. You're not even thinking. You're already thinking about your next meal while you're eating your first meal.
Right.
You know, you're eating oatmeal. Well, I wouldn't be oatmeal if I was gaining weight, but, I mean, you're eating sausage and, you know, all this crazy stuff at breakfast, and you're already thinking about what your snack's going to be. Well, I got leftover steak, and I got this and that, and then I'm going to have, you know, it's crazy.
Right. So, you've done, I think, would you say four shows?
Four shows.
And this last one was Mr. Tennessee.
Yes.
And that was in August of 06.
Yes.
And
best shape of my life.
Best shape of his life.
First time that I was ever really, really proud to be on stage.
Unbelievable. He was a 4'9", 5% body fat right in there, you know, give or take, but right there, tight, solid, awesome. And I went down for that show with Drew and couldn't have been more proud. But, he comes in, he's coming better each show. And as he said, you know, uses the shows to kind of help keep him tight. Now, the thing is, too, is that you came down from 300 to 248, and then you went back up to real close to 300 way back when.
Yeah, I want to say 289. It's
right.
290, somewhere right in that neighborhood, right at knocking on 300's door. Yeah.
And he came down to, you know, 212 or whatever it was for that show where you came in about 10%.
Right.
Then you went back up, and I saw you go back up to maybe, what, 250, 260?
I was right at 260.
And then you came back down for that next show, and you came down again to that whatever it was, 210,
right.
215, whatever
yeah,
it was.
Exactly.
Came in better condition, though. And then you went back up to maybe 240, 250.
Yeah.
Somewhere in there.
Right.
And you came back down to do that. I don't know if by now we're on that fourth show, but
yeah.
What'd you weigh in at the Mr. Tennessee? What was that?
Well, I think it was 204, 205. I don't remember exactly.
Okay.
I think I told you 204, but I think it was actually 205. I just didn't want to say that number out loud to you.
That's funny.
Well, you know, you're one of the few people who are at this point, and, you know, I know you're looking at me, and what I said, 204, 205, it just sounded different.
Yeah,
so,
I hear you. So he comes in at 204. He's 4'9", 5%, give or take. I checked his body fat, and I've been doing this long enough. I've checked thousands of people where I feel very confident with what it is. And looking at him, it's not hard to believe that's what he was. So it all made sense. Came in, you know, in incredible shape. And now here's the thing. You know, he came in 204, 205 on, you know, bodybuilding contest, ready condition, and you've been living since August in the 210, 215?
Yes.
Yeah.
This is and because of the holidays, I've gained about 4 or 5 pounds the last 10 days, and you know
right.
that. I told you I'm going to try to hang out right here.
Right. And so where we're at now is just this, it's just this amazing progression. And you can see it. The mental shift in Drew and talking to him from way back when he was 318 pounds and powerlifter, and what he thought of food and how he, you know, how he managed his food or didn't manage his food is a better way to say it.
I think it managed me.
Exactly. That's an excellent way to say it. Compared to now, you've now come out the kind of the backside of the only way I can really do this is Atkins to the foods are healthier.
Yes.
They are more balanced. They're more in line with kind of
doing this lifestyle,
yeah,
and what you advocate, absolutely.
You've learned something about sugar with you,
yes.
And it's one of the primary things that helps keep you in the shape that you are, which is really good. And
yes.
What have you decided about sugar, and how did you come to that conclusion, and how do you deal with that?
Well, I don't have to deal with it. First of all, now, David, you know I did. I'm addicted to it. I can't have it. Might as well, might as well stick heroin up my veins.
Heroin,
I mean,
right.
Yeah, because that's the way. If I eat one cookie, and you've seen it, and you've witnessed this yourself, and everybody who knows me has, I will not stop eating sugar.
Mm-hmm.
One donut, I'm going to eat a dozen. As a matter of fact, I used to go to a place called down here, if anybody's familiar with the South, it's called Krispy Kremes.
Mm-hmm.
And when I went, I'd eat two dozen there hot when the red light was flashing and take a dozen home and eat most of them before I got home.
Right.
And that's not an exaggeration. People look at me and say, there's no way. Cookies, I would eat a pack. And usually when I said I'd get up at halftime and go get another pack, I might exaggerate. I just couldn't. Once I started eating cookies, I couldn't stop. Cookies, candy. But when I went to the grocery store, always bought two candy bars to eat on the way home.
Mm-hmm.
And then had some goodies in the grocery sack to eat when I got home.
Right.
Can't have them.
And when you say can't, a lot of people, when they begin this process with me, Drew, they're in the same place you were.
Right.
And when they think of giving up some of these foods, they look at it as, that's restrictive. That's a diet. That's something that's just ridiculous. That's overbearing. And for someone to tell me that I'm going to have to permanently, perhaps, maybe not, but maybe I might have to give up that tasty treat for life. See, that sounds like a diet to me.
Well, you know what? Alcoholics have to give up alcohol. If you're addicted to sugar, are you giving up something, or you're gaining the world? You're gaining your freedom is what you're going. Are you a slave? Because that's what you're being every time you put that sugar in your mouth, and it makes you overeat and eat more, and then afterwards you feel guilty and miserable. Who's the master and who's the slave? And I'm just not going to be a slave to food. And, you know, I'm not going to be miserable, and I'm not going to overeat. And if I can't do it with control, in other words, it's controlling me, then I'm not going to do it at all. I'm not telling them what to do, David. They have to come to that realization on their own. That's what I would say it has done for me. And it has freed me up where, you know, you say it restricts you. It's actually freed me up and allowed me to take control of my weight and my body image for the first time in my life.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been a process.
Yes.
You know what? There were a lot of how many false starts do you know that I had?
Oh, dozens.
I bet you can't count them.
Dozens.
Yeah, dozens.
Right.
I would say closer to 50, and that's being legit.
Right.
I had a lot of false starts and a lot of failures, and it took a long time. And you know what? I'm going to say this to everybody out there. They don't know how blessed they are to have you. They don't know how fortunate they are to have you. They've got the best. And yes, we're friends, but you are the best of the best of the best. You don't sugarcoat it. You tell the truth, and there's no joking. And if somebody's not putting in the effort, you're going to tell them they need to go somewhere else. And you can't buy that kind of honesty in this world today. And I love you, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart. I couldn't have done it. I wouldn't be a national champion. I wouldn't be a bodybuilder. I would not have accomplished the things I've accomplished without your help. You've been invaluable in my process and transformation. And I had to say that.
Well, I, of course, am speechless, to be honest. It really is emotional for me. And I appreciate it so very much, more than maybe anybody listening can even know. But I really do appreciate it, Drew.
Well, it's emotional for me as well.
Let me just ask you this. Let's close with this.
Sure.
Generally speaking, you know, the little minute details of the other little things along the way, I think are just really inconsequential compared to the overall story that you've told today. And I think that one of the reasons I do these interviews is because I know that there's someone listening to this right now that's where you were, and they're trying to contemplate whether they should try it again or whether they should even give this a go, or whether they should give themselves another chance. And really all I'd want you to do, if you would, is just, what would you say to the person who's contemplating, you know, this, who maybe doesn't realize they've got food addiction issues, but they know they've struggled with weight a long time? Like you said, it's been their master. They've been a slave to it. What would you say to that person who's thinking about it but doesn't know if they should take the leap again?
You know what? Do it for yourself. Do it for your family, and do it for the people who love you. If you want to be around and you want to be better and you want to take control back, do it. And take it one step at a time. And every time, I've got a friend that I'm talking about this just like you did with me, David. Every time you make a stumble, get right back on the horse. Don't say, oh, well, I failed. I might as well just keep on eating. I've been there, I've done that, and I understand it. If you mess up on a meal, go right back, read about the addiction, read about what you need to do, get online, talk to somebody, log your food, look where you're making mistakes, and keep on keeping on.
I don't think there's anything more I could add that would add any more impact or power than that. It's just awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time with me today, Drew, in the middle of your work day like this. People don't realize that, but Drew's taking time out of the middle of his busy work day to do this for us, and I just appreciate it so very much. And I know that your story, your pictures, anything that we put together with this is just going to impact so many people in just the right way, because if there's anybody that can understand the food addict, if there's anyone that can understand true, you know, eating dysfunction, and all of the above, plus someone who has championed it and has accomplished all that you have in your life, from the personal side to the education to the athletic side, you know, there's just you know, no one that has done it better. And so there's a lot of people that are going to be impacted by this. I know that. I want to thank you.
Well, I hope so.
We'll be speaking to you soon, and we'll get this out for everyone to listen to very soon.
All right.
Thanks so much, Drew.
All right. Bye-bye.
Thank you for listening. To learn more about the Leanness Lifestyle and Club Lifestyle online, please visit www.leannesslifestyle.com. That's www.leanness.com.